Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 138 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and wow, today we're going to be talking about eating disorders, specifically anorexia. This is going to be a very unique, amazing segment. Listen up. Before we begin the episode, just know it's made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate and review us because I want to hear what you have to say about what we talked about, our discussion, anything that we did today, I want to hear about. I'm a-waiting, so I welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
You know, I was cruising through the New York Times, and I happened upon just an absolutely fabulous essay that just blew my mind, because I have been waiting to read something like this for so long. Now, this was all about, well, life after anorexia. Now, how many times have you've read in the popular literature all about a young person, male or female, who has an eating disorder like anorexia. But you never hear what happens to them years later as they are in recovery. Well, I mean, enough with that already. So I read this essay by Lisa Fogarty, who is a writer based in New York. She's written numerous health, beauty, relationships, and culture stories for magazines like Harper's Bazaar, Vogue, and Redbook. She's a graduate of the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, and she absolutely nailed it in this one particular essay. And so I asked her to come on to Her to share her own pretty amazing perspective. Lisa, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So why did you write this essay? What did you want people to know about anorexia that you didn't feel was really being spoken about already?
So I actually wrote the essay last spring. And what had happened was I had an upper respiratory infection. I went to the doctor and he weighed me. And I found out that my weight was, I had lost a lot of weight. And I came home that night and I just kind of broke down and went in my room after I put my kids down to bed and just broke down and cried, because my husband had been telling me for weeks that I was doing strange things at dinner, that I was not eating what the family was eating. You know, I'd make chicken, I'd bread theirs, and I wouldn't bread mine. Or I'd make burgers, turkey burgers, and I wouldn't eat the bread. Just things that I thought I justified to myself, because in my mind, well, I'm still eating. This is, you know, what's the problem? But the reason why I broke down, and that evening I just, the essay just sort of poured out of me pretty quickly, was because I felt so scared and sad and alone. And because after so many years of going through therapy and learning about my triggers, I had missed this trigger. It completely passed me by, and I was right back to feeling like I was 20 years old again, obsessed with food. You know, maybe not as bad as I was at 20, but I couldn't believe I was so upset and embarrassed and angry that I hadn't been cured, that it was still there. So from there, you know, I wrote the essay not really thinking about publication. And when it was finished and I looked it over a few days later, I thought, well, this, maybe there's something here. It's not something that I've read a lot about like older anorexics. And if I'm feeling this, then there has to be thousands, who knows how many women, men feeling the same way. And yeah,
wow.
And so Roberta Zeff was kind enough to publish it. And I'm so grateful. Yeah.
No, I just absolutely, you know, it was really heartfelt And it blew away. It just blew me away. And a lot of the people who I had shared it with, it was like, well, it's about time that we really had an open discussion about what happens to people, you know, further down the line. I think people are living under the mistaken assumption that once you've had anorexia as a child, or adolescent, however it works out, young adult, that once you have treatment, you're done. Let's move on with life, right?
Yeah.
Only to find out it's not quite so simple as that. And
it isn't,
you know, with that, well, with that revelation, how does that affect you?
Well, I have to say that no one ever sat me down and said, you're going to be cured of this one day. So I don't blame anyone for why I thought I would be cured. There was just some message that I must have gotten along the way that this was a young girl's problem, and that once I matured and became this confident woman, like this Beyoncé-type woman, I swear, like just, you know, sauntering around happy in my body, that it would be done. It would be over. And more than anything, there's this shame that I feel like is connected with having this as an older woman. I'm not old, but having this as a woman in my 30s who has children and has a career and shouldn't feel this way. But I think there are a lot of misconceptions about anorexia, and especially about what it's like to be an older, not to be a teenager with anorexia. And I'd love to go on about that.
Yeah, please.
One of the most,
you know, no, please.
Yeah, one of the most important ones, I think, that affects me personally, and it must affect other people, is that even though I know so much about anorexia after having had it, you know, since age 13, I still in my head think that the anorexic is 85 pounds, has brittle hair, has no muscle tone, and right now, sitting here, I am a normal weight. I am not underweight at the moment, but I still have anorexic thinking. And I fear, because it happened to me, that these ideas we have about what an anorexic body looks like keeps us from getting help. You know, I know that there were times where I said to myself, I'm not that bad. I've weighed way less than this. I don't need to go back to therapy. And I held off getting help at a time when I really needed it. When in fact, what I'm learning is that right now, when I'm what you'd call whatever, an average normal weight, this is a time when I should be in therapy, because by the time I weigh too little, I've already gotten so obsessed with it that it's even harder to get back on track. Another huge misconception.
Keep going. Keep going. This is mind blowing.
There is a way, you know, that there is an age limit to it. And this is another thing that has personally kept me from getting help. I've been in therapy for a long time, and I love therapy and I believe in therapy, but one thing that I shy away from now at my age is group therapy. And in fact, after I wrote this essay, I looked into going to group therapy. And I will admit that I told my therapist, nope, I'm not going to do it, because at my age, I actually feel more maternal toward the 15, 16 year olds that I see sitting in group therapy than I do feel like I'm one of them. And I don't see many older women, you know, going to group therapy. And I believe group therapy could be very helpful, but it personally prevents me. The age thing in my head about how I shouldn't have this at age 39, which is what I am now, it does keep me from getting more help. And that's a shame.
Wow.
You know, that I feel should change.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question about it. You know, you use the word, if I remember correctly, recovery, right?
Yeah.
So
yes.
You're basically in recovery. And I really liked it when you said that, because it meant that, no, it hasn't gone away. What you've done is you've learned to manage it. It's a whole different ball game, right? And, you know, tell me, from all the years of your therapy, what is the what is your understanding of the root cause of anorexia?
I think it's probably different for everyone. So for example, for me, it's never been about trauma, as far as, you know, I know that a lot of people have had sexual traumas and really awful things have happened to them. I had a really nice childhood with really lovely parents who were both Italian and cooked beautiful meals and had positive connections to food. So it had never had anything to do with that. For me, I just remember my earliest memory of feeling power through anorexia was one summer I decided I was just going to cut out all sweets. I don't know why I did it, but I lost some weight and I got some attention and it was very, very easy and it was kind of like a high. And then the more I could focus on food and less on any problem that was happening in my life or issue that was happening, the more powerful I felt. And because it became so easy for me and because also you get so much attention. I mean, you get attention for doing this thing that ends up hurting you. It's a powerful feeling for, I think for me, a girl who didn't feel maybe like, I don't know, like I had power or I had control over my life yet. And again, you're going to hear the word shame come back into this conversation 100 times because there's a shame for me in admitting that I had a nice life, I didn't have trauma, and yet I still ended up with this. You feel like you don't deserve to complain about your life when you have decent parents and everything is going okay. But I do think that it's a mental disorder. I don't think that, you know, that I chose it. You know, a big thing that I wish there was more information out there about perhaps the neurological reasons behind anorexia, the genetic reasons. I know now there's a lot more information than there was when I was a kid growing up, but it's still, I think, presumed to be, I don't know, something other than that, you know? For me, it was never, the triggers were never like the fashion industry and models and stuff like that. It just, it wasn't. And it doesn't really inspire me to put the blame on those things. I feel like it was just something that would have happened to me no matter what.
Yes. And you know, it's interesting. Looking at the science in the field right now, there is absolutely no question that the number one therapy for a problem, anorexia, that is absolutely life-threatening, with a mortality rate of 100% if you don't get the appropriate therapy, that this is a very, very serious issue. And that people, you know, people are on a wide spectrum with this. Some end up with life-threatening issues on one end of the spectrum in terms of their total weight and the problems that ensue from that, the medical problems, et cetera. There are other people who are kind of like in the gray zone. They've dropped a bunch of weight, but not that much, you know, not enough to really, you know, hit the radar. And suddenly you're hospitalized and feeding tubes are everywhere and back and forth. This is a really interesting field I've always found. There's a whole subsector of people who have chronic restrictive eating. They've had it for years. I think that is another subsector of what this is all about as well. I think that there are varying degrees of all of this. So, you know, it's not a simple black and white situation. You mentioned a mental health disorder. There's an interesting thing. When I was at the National Institutes of Health, I had collaborated with the National Institute of Mental Health with a group led by Dr. Phil Gold, who's one of their top guys, with one of the last inpatient anorexia studies we did at that time a number of years ago. And I learned a lot. And one of the things I learned was that, you know, the master hormone for stress, master hormone way up in the brain, hypothalamus of the brain, you know, is one in which if it's triggered, eating stops. That happens, like, for instance, if I say, hey, Lisa, your best friend just got run over by a Mack truck. Well, the last thing on your mind is going to be, hey, let's go out and eat and have a nice dinner.
Right.
Instead, what you notice is that you stop eating. You just like, whoa, you know, the last thing on your mind, it literally goes into almost a survival mode. You know, something has happened at that level. You know, it's so interesting. When 9/11 happened, one of the national phenomenons that took place in the United States was people stopped eating. Their
really?
Eating got reduced. Yeah, they were actually so sick of what happened and watching it that it changed their appetites for quite some time.
Wow.
And I'm not surprised in the least because I'm a stress physiologist in addition. So when we were studying this in anorexia, we found that, and this was a study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, that many of the anorectics, I mean, these are the hardcore anorectics who had life-threatening issues we had in hospital, that their levels of baseline stress hormone were through the ceiling. And these are the levels we measured in their cerebral spinal fluid, something that a normal practitioner would never be able to access. We only do this in research.
Right.
And that really means to me is that there is almost a trigger finger on this with so many people who have this issue, that whether it's a ballet instructor who basically says something like, you know, if you dropped a few more, you'd be a prima ballerina. And meanwhile, the kid is already skinny as a rail to start with. Now you've started a whole cycle in this kid's head. Whether it's, you know, you bring up something interesting. You got attention. You said you got attention. And that's fascinating. It means you didn't have enough attention in your head, because otherwise you wouldn't have cared less. You know, if someone said, hey, you look great, or, you know, whatever. And if you were already getting in your own mind, this is your own thing. This is says nothing about your family. It's just your own perception of reality. It wouldn't have meant much, but it meant so much that it captivated you. And, you know,
other thing it did was it prevented me from getting a certain kind of attention. You know, I don't think it's any. I don't think it's a coincidence that I found anorexia when I was developing, when my body was developing.
Exactly.
I wasn't getting that kind of attention anymore from boys. It was more of an admiration from girls. The attention shifts. How do I explain it? I was using it, I think, in a way to hide my body, to stop time. And throughout my life, I've noticed other places. It's something I talk about with my therapist often. Before I take a step forward, whether it's becoming pregnant or getting married or anything that is going to change my life drastically, I get very anxious and I don't want to do it. I have to force myself to make those changes. And in those moments, I know that that can be a trigger to start focusing on food, because focusing on food calms me down. The planning and the routine, you know, planning out what I'm going to eat and not going to eat, it literally calms me down.
Well, there are two things I'm going to tell you then. Hello, stress, right?
Yeah.
Because you said you become anxious. These are all times in your life of change, transition, transformation, all of this stuff going on. Hello, stress. And,
absolutely.
You know, your way of dealing with it is trying to take what appears to be something where you're going to be losing control. Like, the control issue is a very big one here with this disorder. You know, if you don't feel as though you've got that, then all of a sudden you've got to find it. And there's one place you can control, and that is how you eat and what you eat. That's why when you started this essay, which I just found to be fascinating, you know, you started with something called the elimination game. And I'm going to read this from what you wrote, because you're also an extremely talented writer. The last time I tasted my birthday cake was the spring I turned 13, a few months before I discovered the elimination game. The game went like this. First, stop eating sweets. Second, blot sauces, oils, and dressings with paper towels while no one was looking. Third, count grams of fat. Reject any food with over 3 grams and keep a calorie tally in the back of your math notebook, where if someone found it, they'd assume it was just math. The elimination game also involved add the toilet bowl and the sewer down the street to the list of places you could discard food. Add candy bar wrappers and empty full-fat yogurt containers to your bedroom nightstand as evidence that you're not sick. Finally, add up the pounds you've lost that week that signify victory. So easy. Repeat. Wow.
Yep.
I'm reading this going, holy moly. This is just, I mean, you know what I'm saying here? That's very powerful. And there you have it. And so my question to you is, you know, when you were going through these changes, your husband noticed the changes and back and forth. I wonder what was going on in your life that was stoking up the anxiety, you know?
At the time, we were planning a move, and something as small as that, because, you know, on the scale of things, planning a move is nothing like having a baby, but it really is any major change can produce an anxiety in me, and I don't handle the anxiety well, and this is something, you know, I never do what I did at the start of my essay. I never do what I did at 13, 14, 15, but I still do other things. Like I said, skipping the bread, you know, small things that I justify to myself that I need people around me to call me out for, because I still don't see it all the time. You know, it's the same way. I actually, during that same time, my husband and I were watching some funny movies about camp. I can't remember, with Amy Poehler. Now the name escapes me, but there was a woman on the screen, and I turned to him and I said, you know, I think she's got a beautiful body. Like, am I as skinny as her, or what do I? And he looked at me, he said, you are like 15 pounds less than she, you weigh like 15 pounds less than her. And I have no capability of seeing it. There are days when I just don't even see my body, and I need to rely on people who I trust and love to tell me if I'm looking too thin, or it's a really odd thing to be this age and still not have a really good sense of what your body looks like.
Do you do physical activity, like exercise?
I do exercise, but I don't over exercise, and I do I don't do cardio. Like, there are things that I won't do because I feel afraid of them. So I stick to things like bar and yoga, you know, things that make me feel good inside, but nothing that will burn calories, you know, excessively.
Okay, I see. Yeah, because it'll take you down to that. It's like a trigger in many respects. No question about it. You know, I would just so recommend, you know, because when we were studying anorexia, we were thinking about this a lot, that, you know, to quiet the fires, and meditation, any form of meditation done on a very routine basis, you know, the practice of meditation is extraordinarily powerful with something like this. And I think it'll help you, you know, really stay attuned to your body so you don't feel so detached from it and dissociated from it, which is exactly what happens in most disordered eating. But meditation is a beautiful way to heal the mind and the body. Have you ever tried it?
I have, actually. I have an app on my phone, and for a while I was doing, like, my husband and I we decided to do 20 minutes a day, and we actually went to Woodstock, and we took, we went to, I forgot where it was like a Buddhist retreat where we, like, took a class with, like, a free class and learning how to meditate, even though there's really nothing to it. It's more about just doing it. But I did find that time helpful. It's hard for me to keep up with the kids and stuff, but it's definitely something that I can see being really helpful.
I just see it as, do something like this, Lisa. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Just do it in mini chills, here, there, and everywhere. Just a little bit here, a little bit there. Because I really think that it would be of extreme help to you to quell so much of that anxiety, and therefore really nip the triggers, especially anxiety, in the bud. Yeah, there's a bunch of apps out there, you know, Headspace, Calm, a lot of them going on. You could also just take a long walk and just do a walk, walking meditation. You can sit quietly, You can make it up as you go along. Prayers, meditation. There's so many options out there. You already have a yoga practice. You can kind of work it off that. But I really think it would help tremendously. And I really want to just, on behalf of, you know, the HER podcast audience, listeners, just express our incredible gratitude and appreciation for your courage in coming forth and sharing what you shared. Because I'm going to tell you, I know for a fact that it touched a tremendous number of lives. Certainly mine at a professional level. It really, I use it now for people who think that everything is just hunky-dory, but it's not. I think it's written beautifully to be able to help people like that. And I encourage you to continue the conversation however you're going to do it, because I really think that this is a very worthy message. And for everyone out there, the actual essay was called When Anorectics Grow Up, in the New York Times Well section by Lisa Fogarty. And Lisa has a wonderful website of her own, lisafogarty.net, where you can learn more about her wonderful work. She's an extremely talented writer and a very courageous woman. And Lisa, I can't thank you enough for being on the HER podcast to share all of this with us.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having, for, you know, keeping this conversation going. I have to say that the moment that I decided I was going to be honest about this was like the moment that I felt so much less shame about it. And I hope that we feel like we can talk about this more out in the open. I think it will really, really help us all.
Yes. Let's just bag the blame, shame, and guilt. And let's just have an open conversation, because that's what this is all about. And thanks to you and your essay, you've opened the door. And we really, really appreciate that. Thank you. All right,
thank
everyone
you
out there on HER podcast land, remember to catch every episode of HER by just hitting subscribe on iTunes or on our show page, where you can actually, once again, listen to this marvelous podcast that we just did with Lisa Fogarty about, you know, growing up with anorexia and anorexia in recovery. Such a powerful podcast. And take a moment or two right now, run on over to iTunes and rate and review this podcast, because I'm waiting to hear from you. Love, love, love your feedback. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peek MD and Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek. And you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.